Hello. This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, 20th of November, 2015. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Judy Stevenson-Baker and Valerie Lilly. Your readers today are Maria Head.
Hello.
Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
And Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are Chiefs Beggar Caution, Communities Show Solidarity with Paris, and Police Open New City Base. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Maria?
Chiefs Beggar Caution. Rough sleepers and con men pretending to be homeless are working the system to exploit Winchester's generosity, civic chiefs have warned. One man is believed to make more than £100 a day by bringing a sleeping bag to the city centre and posing as a beggar, councillors were told, amid warnings that genuinely needy might be confused with fraudsters. Rising numbers of professional beggars are coming to the city for the Christmas rush, one councillor said, taking advantage of services like the Trinity Centre and Winchester Church's night shelter, set up by charities to tackle homelessness in the late 1980s. The Chronicle walked through the city centre at all hours last week and this week, but rarely saw more than three or four people who appeared to live on the streets. But Winchester City Council has identified 13 sleepers coming from other areas in the last few weeks, including two who have social housing outside the district. One beggar, who asked not to be named, said, "It's really annoying. Why can't they stay in their own towns? I've lived in Winchester for 20-odd years, so I think that I've got more right than they have. They end up here from the prison, and we've got some people from other towns." A former mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eileen Berry, blamed the Christmas rush on the city's festive market and cathedral ice rink, which draws hundreds of thousands of visitors. She said, "If you think we've got lots of them now, just give it another couple of weeks. We'll be inundated with new professional beggars. It has been happening year on year, but Winchester has become more and more affluent since we've got these markets. You get more footfall and there's more visitors and tourists. It will always attract people to beg." An emergency meeting was held last month between police probation and the council to tackle rough sleeping imported from elsewhere. Councillor Caroline Horrell, City Council portfolio holder for housing, told full council at Winchester Guildhall, "Not all of it is those who are in absolute need of a bed. We do have some people who are on holiday here and have accommodation in other districts. Some people are trying their best to work the system because Winchester is a generous city and others really do need our help." Councillor Horrell said, "Homelessness in Winchester had not increased, but rough sleeping was on the rise. Last year we saw an increase," she said. "We're hoping when the next count comes that it's much improved. Winchester Business Improvement District has revived its Spare Change for Real Change scheme, encouraging people to support the homeless without giving in the street. Collection boxes can be found in shops around the city centre. It was first launched in the mid-1990s. Rough sleepers found to have no links with Winchester are provided with plans by the council to reconnect them with a more suitable area." Michelle Price, manager of Winchester Church's night shelter on Jewellery Street, said, "Unfortunately, it's not uncommon to see an increase in street begging in Winchester during Christmas time due to the higher volume of people coming into the city to enjoy the festive season. If members of the public feel that they would like to help those who street beg, we would not recommend giving money directly to them. Instead, they could offer to buy them food or a drink. The Trinity Centre on Derngate, which helps many poor people, did not return calls asking for comment. City councillors were briefed on homelessness in Winchester on Tuesday night, and this article comes with a series of pictures of our beggars on the streets of Winchester.
Communities show solidarity with Paris. Winchester stood, Winchester stood shoulder to shoulder with France in a poignant show of solidarity to pay respect to victims of the Paris terror attacks. Thousands of people across the county gathered for prayers, vigils and services to remember more than 129 dead and at least 352 injured. Political and religious leaders led tributes to the dead, while iconic buildings across the region were lit up in red, white and blue, including the Mayflower Theatre in Southampton and Portsmouth Spinnaker Tower. Winchester Cathedral lit up the great screen with the colours of the French flag, and scores of students attended a silence and sandlit, candlelit vigil at the university. Savannah King, president of the Students' Union, said, "I think all the things that have been going on around the world have impacted the students in terms of realising the terrible things going on right now." Religious leaders condemned the attacks. Rashid Barora of Southampton Medina Mosque said, "From a Muslim perspective, anyone doing this does not represent Islam. They're ruining it for the rest of humanity, and we've got to fight them no matter where they come from." The Right Reverend Tim Dakin, Bishop of Winchester, Right Reverend Jonathan Frost, Bishop of Southampton, and Right Reverend David Williams, Bishop of Basingstoke, said today, "We have all been stunned by Friday's tragic events, and our thoughts and prayers are with the victims, families of the victims, and those who survived. These attacks were evil. With their actions, extremists sought to undermine community and to set communities and generations against each other. We must not let them succeed." Politicians in Hampshire also spoke of their horror following the terrifying attack. Winchester MP Steve Bryan said, "These attacks are once again a sight into the heart of darkness. They are also a reminder that British foreign policy cannot be too passive and naively watch world events and hope that guys leave us alone." Leader of the Winchester City Council, Stephen Jeffrey, said, "People have to rally round and think of their European neighbours. What we need to remember is that this has affected normal people, and we hope that people will not be deterred by this attack and will pull together to continue with their lives." County Council leader Roy Perry said, This is horrific and appalling. Our thoughts go out to the families of those individuals. We all have to show solidarity with our French neighbours, and this could have happened in London just as much as Paris. We're all in this together." And there's a photograph of all the tributes laid in Republic Square. People say prayers, place fires and light candles at Republic Square in Paris on Sunday. Thousands of troops have been deployed as the French capital comes to terms with the slaughter.
Police open new city base. The police have opened their new base in Winchester in a move that costs £4.5 million. Over 300 staff will be located at the new station on Tower Street after moving from Romsey Road and the North Wall station. There will be 20 staff working for the neighbourhood team, around 10 PCSOs and one chief inspector. Mottisfont Court, previously owned by Hampshire County Council, has utilised the space with an operations room and a number of meeting rooms, as well as a gym. Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes said at the opening on Monday, "Having the headquarters in the middle of Winchester is a good thing for the officers and for the public. What it says is that we want to be in the middle of the community. We are now closer to the County Council, closer to the law courts and closer to public as a whole." Local resident Dorothy Felton of Cross Street said, "I have lived in Winchester for over 30 years and I think having the police in the heart of the city is a brilliant thing. The North Wall site will be sold to Barclay Homes for development, and this is accompanied by a photograph of them standing outside Mottisfont Court, Simon Hayes and Chief Constable Andy Marsh with some of his officers."
That concludes the headlines, and we continue with the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Baldry, Celia Baldry, aged 91, after a short illness. Booth, Anne Booth, peacefully at her daughter's home, aged 76. Botting, Maurice Botting, suddenly aged 84. Birch, Betty Birch, at home, aged 91. Falzon, Hector Falzon, in Abbots Barton Nursing Home, aged 93. Graham Harrison, Nick Graham Harrison, aged 74. Green, John Green, in Winchester Hospital, aged 75. Langton, Pamela Langton, peacefully at home in her 90th year. Pike, Jean Mary Pike, peacefully aged 84. Reed, John Mabin Reed, after a long illness. Reynolds, Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Reynolds, peacefully aged 87. Roberts, Terry Roberts, in Abbeygate Nursing Home, aged 73. Seymour, Mary Hilda Seymour, peacefully at home following a long illness, aged 90. And Wright, Elizabeth Valerie Wright, after a short illness. Christian comment this week is read by Maria. Thank you, Maria.
And Christian comment is written by Reverend Graham Bokett this week. Paris, Remembrance Sunday and God. Here, in the little set of parishes called the Upper Itchen, we have just marked Remembrance Sunday, All Saints and All Souls, which, whilst dignified and important for me, are among the most difficult services I perform. They form part of a season of sorrows, and I cannot be detached from it. Then, of course, only a few days ago, we had yet another example of people wishing to kill and murder in Paris, to bomb and destroy. Hatred-fueled destruction, perpetrated by people perverting and abusing religion for their own aims and to their shame. It is a really important point. People perverting and abusing religion is exactly the same as people abusing and perverting money, people, power, or position. It is shameful and not anything to do with religion. Rather, it is selfish, egotistical, and reprehensible. I know of no religion that thinks this is the correct way to live your life. It is not Christian, nor is it Islamic. Soon we celebrate the coming of Jesus into the world. The world he was born into was not less dangerous or evil. It seems humanity is quite good and persistent at perpetrating evil, especially against fellow human beings, and especially if they are weaker or less important or just less. Jesus came from God to remind us that whilst the world is what it is, it does not have to be so. God felt so moved that he sent his Son so that we might know God. We might know God understands the sorrow of this world. God offers us hope through Jesus. Jesus, the light among the darkness, giving everybody salvation, especially those who are weaker, marginalised, persecuted. It is this that we celebrate at Christmas. In the Gospel of John, chapter 1, right at the outset, the Gospel writer wants us to understand this and says, In him was life, and the life was the light of mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. This light is Jesus, just in case you were wondering. The sadness of the events in Paris, in Beirut, in Turkey, is depressing. Perhaps it causes you to think, first, what type of world are we living in? Second, how can we make sense of it all? And third, how can we celebrate Advent and then Christmas in the light of all that has gone on? Answers. The world is broken, but it doesn't have to be. Second, we cannot. It makes no sense. It is pure evil. And third, well, we have to. It's what we do. Christians prepare for the arrival of God's Son at Advent and celebrate his arrival at Christmas. Christmas reminds us that even in a world full of darkness, hate and persecution, God broke into the darkness to show us the way to salvation, because he loves all that he has made. The light of Christ is really, really important, especially this Christmas. Peace be with you and all whom you love this Advent and this Christmas.
Now we move to letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by Brian. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, and it's from Kim Gottlieb and entitled Contract Appeal. Sir, the City Council is revelling in the prospect that the judicial review decision could be overturned. That was in the Chronicle of November the 12th. They're trying to create the impression that until the appeal is heard, the original ruling should be regarded as unsound. Until then, they will imply the council should be regarded as innocent of all charges. The truth is very different, in that Mrs. Justice Lang's ruling remains in full effect until such time, if ever, a contrary ruling is made. Crucially, no future ruling will change the fact that the contract was never ever and procured, and the council acted unlawfully by breaching the procurement regulations. Otherwise, the council is still failing to achieve best consideration. It's still playing ducks and drakes over viability. It's still threatening the priceless archaeology. It's still protecting the interests of Henderson, even though, in May, Cabinet voted to not extend the contractual long stop from June the 1st to October the 31st. Today, there is no time limit, even aimed for, despite the knowledge that Henderson are struggling to satisfy the outstanding contract conditions. Henderson is claiming that I have sufficient standing, after 18 months of contesting the slur, that I was complaining only because I wanted to be the developer. It's a tad ironic that if I had been a competitor developer rather than just a concerned councillor, my legal standing would not be questioned. The grant of leave to appeal raises many questions that the council will find difficult to answer. Which of the two schemes represents the best consideration? If it can't be both, and will be the 2009 scheme suddenly become unviable again, given that it's only now they justified making changes in 2014. Why is Henderson still pursuing the 2014 scheme? It's because they really want a scheme with no affordable housing and no bus station. If the appeal is ever heard, which itself is very unlikely, and Henderson to succeed, which is unlikelier still, all it will mean is that the council will have got away with acting unlawfully. It's hardly a thing to revel in. And that's from Kim Gottlieb, Winchester City Council for Itchen Valley.
And this is a letter from Phil Yates, New Styles of Bus. Sir, Stagecoach should be congratulated on supplying a new style bus for local routes under the name of the King City. They are spacious and comfortable. Late night journeys are also supplied. I only hope that the public will take advantage of this new facility. It is pleasing to note that the new vehicles are British manufactured in the delightful Yorkshire seaside resort of Scarborough. I know it well. And that's from Phil Yates of Tower Street, Winchester.
And this letter from Judith Martin is titled Rent Reductions. Sir, I'm glad the Chronicle shares my disquiet over more house sales, November the 12th, although I'd put it more strongly than that. The paper is too polite to give an opinion on the pronouncements of the leader of Winchester City Council, Councillor Godfrey, so perhaps I can provide one. Councillor Godfrey asks, do councillors really think it's a bad thing for tenants to pay less rent? The government-imposed reduction is 1%. For the tenants, this is hardly cause for rejoicing, but for housing associations, it is potential disaster. Back in July, the Financial Times reported that the Office for Budget Responsibility said the cut would lead to housing associations abandoning plans to build 14,000 homes, while the National Housing Federation said the figure would be closer to 27,000. The reality is that many tenants will not see the 1% in their pockets as it is now covered by housing benefit. This is the true target of government, which wants to cut the benefit bill. But earlier this month, the Institute for Fiscal Studies described the policy as a transfer from social landlords to the Exchequer. And it comes as the Treasury hacks ever deeper at the overall money councils receive. Even when councils couldn't build their own housing, they could give support grants to housing associations. On top of this is the definition of affordable, which has somehow crept in with no debate that I recall. It is now 80% of market rent, which in Winchester especially is not affordable to most normal working families. Now in the Housing and Planning Bill, Councillor Godfrey praises, comes pay to stay, meaning that any tenant earning, outside London, over £30,000 a year will have to pay full market rent. Perhaps Councillor Godfrey could ask his accountants to calculate the cost of insecurity, anxiety, overcrowded housing, and ultimately homelessness in terms of mental and physical health, family disruption, damage to children's education. The list is long. Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And Kate Fremantle writes about Society's Opera. Sir, your preview of the forthcoming WMOS Carmen at the Theatre Royal was excellent, but I have to comment on one statement you made. It will be the first opera performed by WMOS since 2001. Oh, no, it isn't. Strictly speaking, I suppose, it's the first opera ever performed by WMOS, as previously the society was called the Winchester Operatic Society, WOS, and under that name they performed Mascagni's opera Cavaliera Rusticana in November 2009. Although always described as being a true one-act opera, in fact this is clearly full-length. If short, having the first act an intermezzo and the second final act, 2009 was the second time WOS had performed the opera. The first time was in 1992, and at both times was coupled with trial by jury as a complete contrast. I have a particular interest here, as I sang the 1992 production, and I sang the role of Turiddu's mother, Lucia, and in the 2009 production, I sang Santusa, the tragic heroine. I have very happy memories of both productions. My 15-year-old grandson, George, will have his first experience of an opera on November the 21st, as he's coming with me and my husband to see the final performance of Carmen at the Theatre Royal. A few legs, everybody. Kate Fremantle from Clacton Road, Portsmouth.
And a letter from Graham Cranmer, concern over access at Sun Lane. Sir, I share the concerns of Mr. Gibson and Beverly Morgan about the lack of consideration being given to the planning of access to housing development sites, though I fear their representations may prove to be in vain. Letters October the 29th and November the 12th. When, months ago, I went to see the plans for 500 houses in Alresford displayed in the town, I questioned one of the councillors in attendance about access from the A31 Alresford bypass to the proposed single site off Sun Lane. Now apparently the plan favoured by the City Council against the wishes of many residents. Acknowledging embarrassment and frustration, he explained that arrangements for access are not and cannot be considered until the development itself is up and running, as this provision is specifically excluded from planning procedures. Perhaps someone in the planning department can confirm, deny, or in either case explain this apparently ludicrous situation. Graham Cranmer, Old Alresford.
And Robert Hutchinson's letter concerns climate change. Sir, 2015 is set to be the hottest year ever recorded. Politicians and campaigners will soon gather in Paris for the latest attempt to prevent runaway climate change. The build-up of greenhouse gases has already reached dangerous concentrations. We are at risk of pushing our climate system towards abrupt, unpredictable, and potentially irreversible changes. It is now widely agreed by governments that most fossil fuel reserves must be left in the ground. I will be in Paris with the group Cap Global Carbon, proposing a novel mechanism to do just that. Yet billions of pounds continue to be invested in seeking out and extracting fossil fuels, even though, if we are to stabilise the climate, most of them will never be burnt. Hampshire Pension Fund, administered by the County Council, has tens of thousands of contributors and pensioners and a value exceeding £5 billion, including major investments in fossil fuels. In July 2014, the Law Commission published a report on the fiduciary duties of pension funds. It concluded that while the pursuit of a financial return should be the predominant concern of pension trustees, trustees may allow non-financial concerns to be taken into account, provided trustees have good reason to think that scheme members share their view and there is no risk of significant financial detriment to the fund. More recently, Mark Carney, Governor of the Bank of England, warned that putting money into fossil fuels is no longer a safe investment. His September the 29th speech on climate change and financial stability can be read on the Bank of England website. Cities across the world and many other institutions have already taken their money out of dirty energy. Time is short. Are we going to stop relying on fossil fuels or sit back and watch the ever more severe floods, droughts and hurricanes on television? If you are a member of the Hampshire Pension Fund, you can email pensions@hants.gov.uk to ask the fund to stop investing in fossil fuels. There are compelling reasons for doing so. Investing in fossil fuels is highly risky economics and woeful ethics. Robert Hutchinson, Clifton Road, Winchester.
And Roger Grucock writes about Bishop's history. Sir, to counter Dick Selwood's assertion that Henry Beaufort, Bishop of Winchester, is a suitable candidate after whom to name a school, in the letters of November the 12th, may I point out that whilst presiding over the trial of Joan of Arc, he neither intervened when she was threatened with torture, nor when the judge felt it imperative to check the integrity of her virtue. The said bishop then presided over her unsafe conviction that she was a scapegoat for military failures after Agincourt, stitched up by the English crown, and her unnecessarily inhumane execution by being burned alive. She was just 19 years old. Are the pupils of the school which bears his name aware of the bishop's well-documented and unchurchment-like decisions? And that's from Roger Grucock, Ashdown Close, Chandler's Ford.
And from Jill Davis, surgery petition. Sir, at the full council meeting on November the 4th, I presented a petition signed by over 400 people regarding the future of St Clement's Surgery. The petition read, "We petitioners request that Winchester City Council commits to building a new surgery for the St Clement's practice in the centre of the city, irrespective of what happens with the Silver Hill development, so that the future of the practice and the interests of the 17,000 patients are properly protected." Councillors debated the petition for a short while afterwards, but I left the meeting none the wiser. Firstly, Councillor Godfrey gave his explicit assurance that a new surgery would be completed by August 2017. But let it be known that the project is only just viable. Surely, necessity outweighs viability in the case of this essential service. Secondly, I read on the council website that essential work is progressing behind the scenes to enable the long-awaited Silver Hill development to start on site by the end of the year. And yet, the planning permission for a new surgery has expired, and its proposed new location is still a car park. There appears to be a disconnect in the timescales for the construction of a new surgery and the beginning of the Silver Hill development. What is clear is that the surgery and its patients cannot function on an island site surrounded by bulldozers busy pulling down old buildings in readiness to rebuild the monstrosity that is the new Silver Hill construction. Finally, it was shocking to hear that the councillors were unable to debate our petition in any detail because, as Councillor Hiscock pointed out, the councillors themselves do not have all the relevant facts. In this post-Winchester March era, the transparency and consultation, Winchester City Council's latest buzzwords, still appear to be in short supply, even to councillors themselves. Jill Davies, Nuns Road, Winchester.
And this letter comes from Judith Oakes. Sir, I have had a quick look at the summary accounts for Worcester Cathedral for the year ended March 31st, 2015. They show income for the year of £2,284,000 and expenditure of £2,567,000, giving a deficit of £283,000. At Worcester, the suggested donation is £5, Chapter's message in 2011. This compares with Winchester Cathedral's entry charge of £7.50, which lasts a year and includes a free guided tour. Worcester Cathedral does not apparently have a compulsory entry charge, but I should imagine that they may be under some pressure from their bank manager to consider it. Judith Oakes, Mead Road, St Cross.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, looking back, we begin with news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Brian.
And that is November the 20th, Monday, 1815. Good news for sweeps. Winchester. A mechanic most respectfully informs the public that he's invented a machine which will clean chimneys equally effectual, expeditious and cheap as by sending children at them. The inventor's circumstances not enabling him to put his laudable design into execution, he have in view of the abolition of the present inhuman system, he respectfully solicits the patronage of the Friends of Humanity for that purpose. A model on the scale of 3 inches to a foot may be inspected by applying to A. Allen, Cabinet Maker, King Street, Gosport.
And 100 years ago, Saturday, November the 20th, 1915, worries over Greece, Winchester. At a time when the country is anxiously awaiting positive news from the easternmost theatres of war, and when, at the same time, interests at home are primarily absorbed in the great scheme for recruiting every man of serviceable age, It is not easy to suggest which, for the moment, is the more important of the two questions. Certainly it is that both are more than important. They are the vital questions of the day. In the chaos of rumour that comes from Greece, there is still no sure sign of a definite development or decision, but there appears some ground for belief that the situation has improved since the recent talks with King Constantine. Sock thief nabbed. Winchester County Bench. Alleged theft at Kingsworthy. Amy Foreman, a woman on the road, was charged with the theft of three pairs of gentlemen's socks of the value of 2 and 6 pence at Kingsworthy on November the 15th. Sarah Ewan's widow, Kingsworthy, stated that at about 11 a.m. on Monday, she hung out some of her washing on the clothesline in the garden, including the three pairs of socks in question. Soon after 3 p.m, a neighbour named Miss Watts gave her certain information, as a result of which she went into the garden and found the socks were gone. Miss Elsie Watts stated that about 3:15 she saw the prisoner in Mrs. Ewing's garden in the act of taking the socks from the line.
And from there are three items from 50 years ago. Saturday, November the 20th, 1965. More dumped cars. Mr. J. Taylor, deputy clerk to Winchester Rural District Council, told Winchester County magistrates on Tuesday that the council was very concerned with the increasing abandonment of cars on roadsides. He was bringing a test case against Staff Sergeant Joseph Kavanagh of Married Quarters, RAPC, Worthydown, under the Litter Act. He told the court, when applying for costs of £2, that he could have applied for costs of £42 for storing the car. Kavanagh was fined £5 and ordered to pay the £2 costs. Apples and pears. Most of the horticulturalists who attended a special meeting at the Winchester NFU headquarters on Wednesday decided they were in favour of setting up an apple and pear development council, intended to look into the marketing, handling and distribution of fruit. It will supplement the already existing apples and pears publicity. And the final item, trotting race. A trotting match, on which considerable bets were pending, took place on the Turnpike Road leading from Bishop's Waltham to Wickham on Saturday last, between two hacks belonging to Mr. Cantwell and Mr. Kurzweil of the former place. The distance was 6 miles, which was performed in 21 minutes, and the horses were so nearly equal in speed that it was difficult to decide on the winner. The umpires, however, decided in favour of Mr. Cantwell.
And now, 25 years ago, on Friday, November the 16th, 1990. M3 battle heads to the EU. Opponents of the M3 link at Winchester announced they were submitting formal complaint to the European Commission. They've ruled out another challenge to the courts in this country. It was last month that a judge to the High Court in London rejected the claim of the M3 opponents that the government had failed to make an environmental assessment of the new link and was thus in breach of the European Community Directive. The action had been brought by Mr. David Croker, Mrs. Barbara Bryant, Mr. Merrick Denton Thompson, with Twyford Parish Council and Compton and Shawford Parish Council. And secondly, pollution kills fish. Woodington Nature Reserve at Wellow has been hit by a mystery pollution which has killed off quite a few young fish. Mr. John Harris of Woodington Nature Reserve says that 4 years ago he bought the reserve, which includes a stream which rises in the New Forest and eventually discharges into the Blackwater. When he took over the area, it was neglected, but thanks to his efforts, fish have now returned to breed in this tributary system. It's a very big setback, said Mr. Harris. He suspects the problem may be caused by sewage overflow.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Margaret and will be followed by First Person, read by Brian. Thank you, Margaret.
There is a risk for any newspaper when reacting to reports that street beggars purporting to be homeless are nothing of the kind. Even if the reports are true, how will such news affect those who are in reality facing hardship on the streets? Are the reports even based on reality? In short, how should the Hampshire Chronicle react when even those in authority, in this case local authorities in both Winchester and Southampton, state as fact that some who appear homeless are fraudsters, and even those who do not have a settled home can be collecting up to £200 a day from generous passers-by? For this paper, it was important we took to the street ourselves to see what evidence we could find of such activities. In truth, we found very little and have balanced our reports of municipal concerns with reports of the results of our investigations. We have also spoken to those who support the homeless. They are concerned that giving to those who beg on the streets is in any case not the best way to help those truly in need. Far better to support charities and organisations who can provide support. This paper's reports then are not intended to demonise the homeless, but neither are they intended to brush the subject of possible abuse of kindness under the carpet.
And Khalid Aziz writes the one first person, which says, "Run, pass me that chair." When it comes to athletics, as a small boy, I was a bit keen. I could run quite fast and won the odd 100 yards. Yes, it was yards in those days, not metres, race at school. In my early 20s, I well remember winning a pancake race in through the streets of central Leicester, nearly giving myself a coronary after completing the race by running up 8 flights of stairs for the office block where lay the studios of my alma mater, BBC Radio Leicester. I guess it was at that point that I got to know, admire and emulate Oscar Wilde's famous dictum about matters athletic. When I feel the urge to exercise, I lie down till it passes. Wise advice, but of course very wrong in today's environment when we're all being urged to do more to stave off the evils of obesity, diabetes and ultimately early death. But when report after report insists that a brisk walk is as beneficially healthy as jogging or serious running, why do all this adulation of those who reach the pinnacle of athletic success, a medal to the Olympic or lesser games? In the Aziz household, Mr. and Mrs. do the walking, in the morning Mrs. in the afternoon, and the redoubtable dog Arthur. For further exploits, see Hampshire Chronicle Passim. Sorry, I don't know what that means. Does the running. Arthur certainly looks well on it, whereas Mr. and Mrs. are not in quite such good shape, unless you count roundness as a physical attribute. Mind you, he eats the same designer food, day in, day out, and doesn't drink except water, the filthier and better even though our chalk-filtered, borehole-pumped, gin-clear supply is freely on offer. So it was with a certain amount of wry smugness that I heard at the beginning of the week of the trials facing the international athletics industry. Who would have thought it? The Russians apparently bribed officials to turn a blind eye to athletes' blood testing on a par with the wastewater outlet from a pharmaceutical factory. And what about the Moscow laboratory, where the boss thoughtfully destroyed 1,400 examples prior to an inspector's visit? Obviously, just a bit of spring cleaning. Easy mistake to make. Even the sainted Lord Seb Coe has seen his name besmirched, but it has to be said by his own hand. I'm not sure I would have characterised any of the people I've followed into public roles, eminent though they may have been, as my spiritual leader, unless they've actually been canonised, and then I would have wanted to have been there to see the Pope making with the censer and splashing the holy water about. So it is that the one sport after another appears breathtakingly bent. Football, the beautiful game, is, thanks to the likes of Sepp Blatter, decidedly ugly. This week it's athletics, and will there be more to come? At grassroots, I see real commitment by volunteers. My brother, for one, who some years had a major coaching role at the Winchester Rugby Club, But these people are let down by the blazerati who still dominate our major sports. So why do we allocate so much public money to the great set-piece events such as Olympics? The most hollow word handed about is legacy. We can justify the cost because of the legacy. Code for the whole country will rise up as one and start running on the spot, so bedazzled are they by the performance on track and field. Well, now we know that many of the medal winners had a little help from the pill and the needle, and that suit and that suits run that suits the runs and sorry excuse me and that the suits run sp- the sport converted convived in it too. For evil to succeed, all of that is needed is for good men to do nothing. Now, where's that chair? I need to sit down.
Belgarum's alternative view of the news this week has two items, the first headed TV's Matt Left in the Dark. It was meant to be a Christmas light switch on that would showcase Winchester's festive spirit to the millions across the UK. With BBC's The One Show in attendance and presenter Matt Baker leading the honours in front of a crowd of thousands outside the Guildhall, everything appeared to be going to plan. But as they switched on the lights, rather than a full-on dazzling display, there was a glimmer of lights in the distance. Only one of the lights turned on, which was followed by an awkward moment as the cameras quickly turned to the awkward-looking presenter and the crowd. The apparent glitch was picked up by viewers of the show and Winchester residents. One took to Twitter to say, "Winchester broadcasts the Christmas lights switch on the One Show, and someone can't even press the button at the right time." Another said, "Matt Baker turns on Winchester's Christmas lights on live TV, and nothing happens." Despite the glitch being broadcast to millions across the UK, the lights came on seconds later, but by then the show had moved on. Explaining what happened, BID executive director, which organised the switch-on, Catherine Turness, said that it was due to the unpredictable nature of national television that changed its countdown time at the last moment. Ms. Turness said, "I think the element of national television made it a little bit more chaotic than usual." She added, "What happened was they were running out of time on the show itself and the countdown was changed from 10 seconds to 3 seconds. And I had very little time to communicate it to the contractor." And that's accompanied by a photograph of Winchester lights ablaze, eventually. And the second item is bigger baubles at Brooks. Are these the largest festive baubles in Hampshire, Belgarum wonders? Hanging inside the Brooks shopping centre, they bring a sense of festive fun to the oft-criticised centre. Belgarum rather likes the large balls hanging from the roof and installed to coincide with the turning on of the Christmas lights around the city last week. Whereas the colour theme of the main outdoor Winchester lights in recent years has been white, the Brooks has a warmer golden glow. As well as the giant baubles, a robot polar bear prowls the lower floor greeting visitors and inviting them to take pictures. Even though it's robotic, shoppers have been seen flinching away from it as if it was going to attack them. The centre, set to celebrate its 25th anniversary soon after coming out of the administration earlier this year, will be hoping these attractions will attract hordes of shoppers to Beals, Argos, HMV, New Look and Primark. And there are two photographs of the giant baubles brightening up the Brooks centre. Now this week's announcements, and we begin with What's On. There are several events in and around Winchester. On Friday the 27th of November, at the Winchester Discovery Centre at 7:30pm, Janet Sussman will join author Chris Mann in a performance of music, poems and images from his book Lifelines. Cost is £10, and further information is available on 01962 873 603. That's 01962 873 603. On Monday the 30th of November at Winchester Cathedral, Rowan Williams will celebrate 70 years of Christian Aid at the Christian Aid Special Service at 7:30 p.m. On Friday the 4th of December at the Winchester Discovery Centre at 7:30 p.m, Winchester Fusion Choir is in concert. Tickets cost £5.50 and may be obtained from 01962 873 603. That's 01962 873 603. On Saturday the 5th of December, there's a winter fair at St Lawrence in the Square from 10:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. And also on Saturday the 5th of September at Winchester Cathedral at 7:30 p.m, the Waynesfleet Singers Christmas Concert includes Haydn's St Nicholas Mass, Salieri's Coronation Te Deum, and of course carols for all those attending. The tickets are available on 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. And finally, from the 1st to the 24th of December, Woolly Hat Fair comes to Winchester. This event is arranged so that behind 24 doors in Winchester, an event happens on each day. That's one for each day from the 1st to the 24th of December. Look out for information throughout the city. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 20th of November at 7:28 a.m. and begins at 4:13 p.m. On Wednesday the 26th of November, it ends at 7:37 a.m. and begins at 4:07 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. Now we continue with items of general news, and the first item is read by Maria. Thank you, Maria.
Solicitors rock out at world-famous venue. When you imagine lawyers, the first thing that comes to mind probably won't be a rock band playing on one of the world's most famous venues, but one Hampshire solicitor firm swapped the courtroom for the stage when they performed at a rock concert played exclusively by law professionals. Solicitors Coffin Mew, which is based in Southampton's Cumberland Place, came joint first in the Law Rocks contest, a live show which raises money for charities. Coffin Mew was raising money for Naomi House and Jack's Place, the Sutton Scotney charity that provides care for children with terminal and life-threatening illnesses. Staff members from Coffin Mew took up their guitars, keyboards and drums and performed hits to a packed-out crowd in the 100 Club in London. They also cracked out classic hits like Live and Let Die by Paul McCartney and Wings, as well as modern tunes including Rather Be by Clean Bandit. Since Law Rocks launched in 2009, hundreds of thousands of pounds has been raised for various charities. The event provides an opportunity for legal professionals all over the world to unleash their inner rock star. And there's a picture of three members that I can see in the photo playing in the nightclub, two guitarists and a lead singer.
Police hunt dogs after a boy is bitten. Armed police descended on Otterbourne after a 12-year-old boy was attacked by two dogs. Dozens of police and a search helicopter headed to Otterbourne last Friday after reports of the Rottweiler had bitten a child. The boy, a secondary school pupil, was taken to Southampton General Hospital just after 3 p.m. with severe wounds to his arms and legs. The Chronicle understands he was due to have been discharged from hospital on Tuesday. Police dog units, armed officers, police in riot gear and police helicopter all attended Boyett Lane near the Otter Public House and were assisted by the dog's owners in a desperate search for the dangerous animals, which lasted for several hours. Officers were also going door to door advising residents to remain indoors and told people to avoid the area. Hampshire Constabulary confirmed they'd captured the dogs just before 7 p.m. last night and had taken them to kennels to be dealt with. It was unclear what will happen to the animals. One resident of Boyart Lane, which backs onto the field the police were searching, said, "I was putting my washing out and I could hear the dogs barking. I could see they were trying to get into next door's chickens. I came up to the house to get a broom and could see some kids walking about down there. Earlier, they'd been stroking them." She added, "Then when I went back down, all I could hear was screaming. One of the boys was injured and one of them called an ambulance. They asked me if they were my dogs and I said no. The boy who was injured said they'd gone for his left arm and both his legs. He was in a lot of pain and was shaken up." Neighbour Mark Stringer said, "I came home and the neighbour said the dogs had tried to get into their garden and get to the chickens." The 44-year-old fish farmer added, "It's a bit scary because my kids would usually be playing down at the bottom of the garden if it was light." One of his neighbours added, "I was bringing the bins round to the front and saw a neighbour come running out of the house and said we need to call an ambulance. She said her dog's possibly attacked a child at the bottom of the gardens. I went and got a garden rake in case they were still there. A rapid response unit was already there and I saw the lad had a tooth mark on his left hip, and he said he had a pain in his right leg and couldn't get up. There were a couple of his mates there. One of them said he scared the dogs off. According to the latest figures, 17 people have died in the UK from dangerous dog-related injuries since 2005. An estimated 200,000 people a year are bitten in England.
Improving elderly motorists' abilities. Older drivers can keep their awareness levels high in awareness workshops. Older drivers in Hampshire are involved in fewer accidents than most other age groups, mainly because they have more experience, competence and patience. However, their eyesight, hearing, reaction time and judgment of speed and distance may not be as sharp as it once was, and in the event of an accident causing injury, they can take longer to recover. The Driver's Skills Scheme 60 Plus workshop will show people how to stay safe and independent. It will raise awareness of the highway code and driving licence regulations. The workshops, which are for motorists aged 60 and over, have been organised by Hampshire County Council.
PM must look at payoff laws. Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner has called on the Prime Minister to look at employment laws that he claims led to an extraordinary payout to one of Hampshire's top police officials. Jenny Douglas-Todd was handed £220,411 after leaving the role of Chief Executive of Hampshire's Office of the Police and Crime Commissioner, OPCC, after just 15 months. Now Simon Hayes has told the Chronicle he backs calls for the government to re-examine the legislation and called on David Cameron to look at severance and redundancy payments. The figures came out through research by the Taxpayers' Alliance of Police Staff and employees receiving packages of more than 100,000. They show how the £220,411 received in 2013 to 2014 included a £35,948 compensation for loss of employment, £9,825 in pension contributions and £174,638 in salary, fees and allowances. That included her £90,000 salary and other money paid to her in a package after she left the OPCC in January last year, some of which dated to when she worked for the police authority. Southampton Itchen MP Royston Smith has said the culture of excessive payouts to already highly paid public sector workers needed to end. And Mr Hayes, who has previously said this was Mrs Douglas-Todd's entitlement agreement, he said government should look at legislation that insists on these extraordinary payouts. The public finds it difficult to accept that employment law says these sums have to be paid across the public sector when people leave employment. I call upon the Prime Minister to examine levels of severance and redundancy payment to put some realism into UK employment legislation. Mr Hayes denied that a personality clash was the reason behind Mrs Douglas-Todd's departure. Mrs Douglas-Todd, who lives near Winchester, has previously worked in the Probation Service, Central Government and the Independent Police Complaints Commission, joining the Police Authority in 2009 as Chief Executive. In November 2012, this was replaced by the OPCC, and the 52-year-old mum became its Chief Executive. On her departure, the PCC said, "Jenny has decided it is time for her to move on and explore new challenges. She is now Managing Director of Diversa Consultancy, a company registered to Harrow, Middlesex, and works for the General Dental Council. The Chronicle has been unable to contact her." A Treasury spokesman said, "We will do all we can to rein in excess where we find it, including bringing pay and perks at the top end of the public sector under control." The Chancellor has been clear the government will claw back redundancy payments for high earners who leave and then return to the public sector within a year, and change the law so that public sector payoffs are capped at £95,000. The Chancellor will issue guidance on pay and terms that sets out what he regards as unacceptable practices. And there is a photograph of Jenny Douglas-Todd with this article.
On a similar line, council scraps two officials. Two of Winchester's top council officials are set to be made redundant. Some councillors have criticised plans to merge the roles of Chief Operating Officer Stephen Wetnall and Finance Boss Alexis Garlick as part of a £100,000 a year savings drive. The pair, who earned a combined £170,000 last year, have been described by a spokesman as great servants to the City Council. Councillors criticising the Civic High Command over issues like Silver Hill have suggested the move is extremely ill-advised because a review of council decision-making has yet to be completed. The reorganisation comes ahead of a report by lawyer Claire Lloyd-Jones, which will highlight the effectiveness of the council's leadership over Silver Hill. Mr Wetnall has worked at the council for around 25 years. He earned £101,000 in 2014-15 with an £83,000 salary, topped up by expenses and benefits, largely from his role as returning officer at May's general election. Ms Garlick, who joined the council in 2006, earned £69,000 plus £4,000 in expenses and benefits. Councillor Vicky Weston, deputy leader and portfolio holder for the service literary, said, "These changes will help make the council more efficient and save us up to £100,000 a year." Last year, Ms Lloyd-Jones, in review of Barnet Council, criticised inexperienced officers for having no understanding of local government law. "The case holds lessons for Winchester," said Councillor Rose Burns, who had lost a motion earlier this month to block the redundancies. She said, "If authorities do not have available high-level knowledge and experience of local government law as decisions are formulated, the outcome, as Barnett discovered, can be damaging reputationally, operationally and financially. What will be the public perception of timing of a staff shake-up proposal that concerns governance? Will they consider it to be not only badly timed, but extremely ill-advised?" Ms Garlick declined to comment, and Mr Wetnall didn't respond when asked whether they would apply for the new role of corporate director, professional services. And there's a photograph of Stephen Wetnall with this report.
Tax offices to go. Tax offices in Hampshire are set to close as HM Revenue and Customs moves to slash its number of offices. The HMRC office in Southampton has been earmarked to close as early as 2019, and two offices, Portsmouth, shutting between 28 and 2026. The move comes as HMRC plans to close 137 offices under a modernisation programme. There are currently around 58,000 employees spread over 170 offices across the UK, ranging in size from 6,000 staff to fewer than 10. 13 regional offices will be set up across the country to consolidate its workforce, including one in Croydon and one in Stratford. HMRC says it expects between 5,000 and 5,300 full-time equivalent employees will work in the Stratford Regional Centre and 2,500 to 2,800 full-time equivalent employees in the Croydon Regional Centre. But the majority of its existing offices in London, South East and East of England will close by 2020-2021. As it moves most employees into the new regional office centres. The latest round follows the closures of offices at Andover Road, Winchester and Ogle Road in Southampton, announced in 2007 and completed by 2011. The government body said that where offices are a long way from a new regional centre and it is not possible for employees to move closer to one, they will do everything it reasonably can to help them find new roles in an effort to reduce redundancies. Lynn Homer, HMRC's chief executive, said, HMRC is committed to modern regional centres serving every region and nation in the UK with skilled and varied jobs and development opportunities. HMRC has too many expensive, isolated and outdated offices. This makes it difficult for us to collaborate, modernise our ways of working and make the changes we need to transform our services to customers and clamp down further on the minority who try to cheat the system. But the announcement today has sparked fears over how effective of HMRC will be with the Public and Commercial Services, PSC union, saying the cuts would pose a significant threat to the operation of HMRC, as well to the working lives of staff. PSCS General Secretary Mark Sirota said, "No one should be in any doubt that if implemented, these proposals would be absolutely devastating for HMRC and the people who work there. Closing this many offices would pose a significant threat to the operation of HMRC, its service to the public, and the working lives of staff."
Santa set for festive fundraising. Festive cheer will be spread around Winchester in a new fundraising initiative. Winchester Roundtable is introducing the Winchester Santa Sleigh, transporting Santa Claus around the city each December. The sleigh, a converted milk float, will be driven around each evening between December the 12th to the 19th. And local charities will be collecting door-to-door, asking for donations in exchange for sweets. Profits raised will go to the charities that have provided volunteers to collect, with a focus on making a difference at Christmas. And there's a very colourful picture with a bright red sleigh pulled by two reindeer, and Santa Claus in his bright red suit with loads of presents, and Steve Cross, Chris McKenzie and Connor Gately as his helpers.
Closure of more city stores. A coffee shop has been the latest casualty as local businesses closed down. Barista's Coffee House on the High Street in Winchester shut recently after premises were seized by the landlord because of lack of rent payments. Anne Gibson, 62, who visited the shop regularly, said, "It's a real shame to see it go. I really like to go there and grab a coffee, but if you don't pay your rent, this is what happens." Milkshake shop Shakeaway also closed recently in Middlebrook Street, where the Silverhill development is due to take place. It was unclear if the shop, which appeared popular with the young, was in trading difficulties or whether the lease had expired. The City Council and co-developer TH Real Estate, formerly Henderson, aim to start work in the next few months. Ocean Drive Living was another to shut shortly after reopening on Parchment Street. It opened a couple of years ago, selling upmarket Scandinavian goods, and then downsized when the unit was split into two.
Festival of Cheers. The Winchester Wine Festival is bringing a festive taste to the city this month with special guests from BBC One's Saturday Kitchen. It will feature hundreds of different wines, from Hampshire producers to global brands, which visitors can sample. Television wine experts Susie Barry and Peter Richards will be on hand to chat and help recommend wines. The festival will support Naomi House and Jack's Place Hospice, which provide help for young people with life-limiting or life-threatening diseases and their families. Exclusive festival discounts will be available to visitors who will be able to find the perfect bottles for Christmas for a fraction of the standard price. The festival runs from Friday, November the 27th to Sunday, November the 29th at Winchester Guildhall.
Boyfriend had no part in death. The boyfriend of a Winchester University student advisor, found dead, has denied any part in her death. Chris Roston says that he was not to blame for the death of Louise Locke, who was found at her home in Milland Road, Highcliffe. Giving evidence, Ms. Locke's only child, Christy Maguire, claimed Mr. Roston told her he had been arrested for manslaughter for kicking somebody into the road. Winchester Coroner's Court heard how the 44-year-old who worked at Winchester University was found hanging by Mr. Roston on May the 27th. The death was not treated as suspicious by police. The inquest heard Ms. Locke suffered from depression, had suicidal thoughts, and had self-harmed in the weeks before she died. Vicky Hyden of Southampton-based Moore Blatch Solicitors accused police of not following up concerns by a neighbour and asked what notes they had of Mr. Rostron's previous convictions. PC Heidi Boyd confirmed Mr. Rostron has a criminal record, but said she did not know what for without the help of checking the records, but added it was not relevant. It was also alleged at the hearing that police missed key evidence, including a ligature, key text messages, and allowed Mr. Rostron to walk out of the house without questioning. Giving evidence, Mr. Rostron said the relationship was difficult, but that he tried to help Ms. Locke. He said she was arrested and was scared of getting a criminal record. He said he pleaded with her to seek help and described her as manic and vulnerable. Mr. Rostron added she threatened to take her life in the weeks before her death and he had to call the police and ambulance as she frequently hurt herself. He asked for her to be sectioned under the Mental Health Act. The inquest heard she became manic in October after making contact with her estranged father before her relationship with Mr. Rostron started in December. A long-term friend of Ms. Locke, Anne Linton, described her as kind, interested in culture, politics and the arts, and as someone who had a love of life. But she was concerned about Ms. Locke's relationship and said she drank regularly with Mr. Rostron despite her alcohol problems. A report from Ms. Locke's GP, Dr. Jason Collins, was read at the hearing. She had a history of depression, psychotic episodes, anxiety, stress, and alcohol abuse, and was formally diagnosed with bipolar disorder in 2010. In October 2014, she had seen Dr. Collins about low mood and suicidal thoughts. A post-mortem by pathologist Dr. Adnan Al-Badri gave the cause of death as asphyxia caused by hanging. The inquest was adjourned to December the 21st, and there is a photograph of Louise Locke with this article in Happier Times.
Nurse fronts anti-flu campaign. The nights are closing in, coldness greets the morning, and the winter flu is doing the rounds. One nurse from Winchester is hoping to help tackle the illness issue after becoming the new face of the NHS National Flu Prevention Campaign, Stay Well This Winter. Lorna Cousins, 37, who lives in Wick, is deputy sister in the Shawford ward at Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Ms. Cousins said the main reason for applying for the campaign was because of her young family and to ensure children are protected. She added, "Getting your flu spray done is essential for children, pregnant women, vulnerable people and the older population. It's quick, painless and very effective, and I'd encourage everyone who is at risk of serious illness to get it done. I'm proud to be part of the campaign because I have a young family, including my son, who is asthmatic." As Cousins added, "It also helps to tell a lot of people about the flu issues this season. If people are concerned, then the best thing to do is visit their GP. The Stay Well This Winter campaign is touring the country this month to make people aware of the impact of the illness. The roadshow was at the Swan Centre in Eastleigh on Monday and Tuesday. For more information, please visit www.englandnhs.uk or to see your GP." And there's a very nice photograph of Lorna Cousins to go with this article.
Pub's £50,000 revamp. A Winchester City Centre public house is set to reopen following a £50,000 refurbishment. The Crown and Anchor in the Broadway has undergone a radical facelift inside and out and is due to reopen its doors tomorrow. Work started on the refurbishment on November the 6th and has taken more than 2 weeks to complete. The pub is leased from Green King and run by Norfolk-based Hansa Inns. Situated in the city centre and next to the coach station, the pub has the ingredients to be a success, and landlord Steve Meller is hoping the facelift will attract more drinkers, including tourists. The pub will now have new signage, interiors, including flooring, wallpaper and a sports bar. Mr. Meller reiterated that many things that made the pub popular with regulars will stay the same. He said that darts will continue on Mondays, cribbage on Tuesdays and pool on Wednesdays. The pub's menu also hasn't changed, although there will be more specials on offer. He said the revamp was much needed as the pub had not been touched and refurbished for years. The last major refurbishment was when the separate bars were opened up into one open plan space in the late 1980s. Mr. Meller said, "I am very excited about the refurbishment. It is much needed and it will give the place a new lease of life." And there's a photograph as of the pub, the Crown and Anchor, as it was before it was refurbished.
Pupils test MP with interview. Children at Otterbourne School put Winchester MP Steve Brine through his paces in a special interview. Mr. Brine was a guest on the primary school radio broadcast and was grilled by Year 5 children about his roles and responsibilities. In true journalistic style, the children researched Mr. Brine's work and asked him about balancing family life with being an MP, and even visited the Houses of Parliament beforehand. Mr. Brine gave the children tips in broadcasting, as he was a radio broadcaster before he became an MP. Alison Langridge, head teacher, said, "The Year 5 children were incredibly excited at the prospect of interviewing their local MP. They showed great maturity, and in their preparation, undertaking research, planning appropriately polite but probing questions, and managing their obvious excitement. Steve's visit helped the children in many ways, in valuing the school's radio programmes and the appreciation of the different skills for the interviewing VIPs, and which are incredibly important in many other contexts." And there is a photo of Steve Brine with two of the Year 5 children in their school radio station, all looking very professional.
Knitted poppies raise cash for cause. Residents in Bishop's Waltham supported the Royal British Legion's poppy appeal by digging deep into their pockets. Liz Harding, who runs the new wool shop in the High Street, arranged for knitted poppies to be produced by local people for this year's appeal. Hundreds of the poppies were sold, and more than £960 was raised to support the appeal, which helps serve personnel, veterans and their families, including innovative dementia care and research. Ms. Harding said, "It feels really great. We've had lots of people coming in and congratulating me. It makes you feel good about where you live. We have a really great community." I think it's very important, especially with all that happening that's happening in Paris. It comes as the Royal British Legion in Bishop's Waltham is struggling and the branch may have to close. Committee members have warned that unless new members step forward, it'll be unable to continue. The Legion was founded after the First World War, and no servicemen from that conflict are still alive following the death of Harry Patch in 2009. Anyone who saw active service in the Second World War would now be approaching 90 years of age. Only 1 year has passed since 1945, in which no British soldiers were killed on active service.
Transport chiefs dismiss fears. Transport chiefs have dismissed fears that major housing schemes are being built without evidence of their impact on Winchester roads. Chronicle reader Richard Gibson raised concerns about a perceived lack of traffic data for Station Approach and Barton Farm. Councillor Sean Woodward, County Council Executive Member for Transport, said the Council has invested in two strategic land use transport models which include planned growth for the next 20 years. These types of model are used to forecast traffic flows and assess the benefits of new transport infrastructure projects. In an email, County Traffic Survey Manager Mike Shergold said, "Unfortunately, we do not have citywide traffic forecasts available, although we have been reviewing future requirements and the means of providing suitable data. Although initial options have proven to be prohibitively expensive and resource intensive."
Farmers show money grows on trees. Members of a Hampshire Young Farmers Club have proved money can grow on trees. Stockbridge Young Farmers Club ran their first charity, Loglug, for the RABI, Royal Agricultural Benevolent Institution, who support farming families in need. On a wet and windy Saturday, club members delivered 10 truckloads of wood, all donated by local farmers, raising £700. This was the second of the six events the club will run in aid of RABI over the next 12 months. The next will be a nativity play to be performed at Salisbury Market on December the 17th. Stockbridge YFC meets three times a month and welcomes anyone who is between the ages of 10 to 26 years old and has a keen interest in the countryside. Members do not have to be the children of farmers. There are more than 600 clubs nationwide with around 25,000 members. And there's a photograph of a group of farmers holding a banner, Stockbridge Young Farmers, and probably does look a bit wet and windy.
Surprise party for Nina's big birthday milestone. This birthday girl was expecting to mark her special day with a quiet tea party with her friends, but Nina Bear's family had different plans. Instead, they came together with friends and fellow residents to help celebrate Nina's milestone 100th birthday in style, with a party at her Brendan Care Knightwood home. More than 50 guests turned out at the Chandler's Ford home to celebrate with Nina, who has lived in Southampton since the age of four. The centenarian described how she's witnessed Southampton grow from a quiet rural town to a thriving city it is today, vividly remembering how it was also torn apart during the Second World War. But when it comes to living a long and healthy life, it's no great secret for Nina, who says it really is quite simple, hard work and keeping yourself busy. Nina, a keen baker, has always kept herself busy, saying, "I just got on with life." She said, "Even when I was young, I was involved in charity work. My mum and sister were part of the Ladies' Linen League, which instilled a strong work ethic in me. I used to love making cakes, as it was just something I enjoyed. And there's a picture of Nina with her family. She certainly doesn't look 100 to me, and everybody's having a good old smile.
Decision appeal. The Silver Hill developer has welcome news that it can appeal a High Court decision that said Winchester City Council had breached procurement regulations. TH Real Estate has been granted leave to appeal the decision with a hearing in the new year. Work on the scheme is due to start next month. Martin Perry, Director of Development at TH Real Estate, said, "We're delighted with the latest appeal decision, as we were both very disappointed and surprised by February's decision, having sought and complied with legal advice throughout the process." He added, "TH still sought public comments. In the meantime, we welcome feedback which might improve the scheme further and help to bring forward this much-needed regeneration of the Silver Hill area."
New homes approved. A controversial plan for 13 houses for rent in Waltham Chase has been unanimously approved, but left residents reeling. The Hyde Group's development includes 3 3-bedroom houses, 6 2-bedroom houses and 4 1-bedroom flats, all for rent. A spokesman for local residents, Morris King, told the planning committee the site in Lower Chase Road is too far away from local amenities and the lack of walkway could prove an issue for younger families. He added, "We believe this is the wrong site to use. It's like putting a square peg in a round hole and hammering it in with a mallet." Councillors were concerned demands for one-bed homes were not being met. Debbie Rhodes, City Council Strategic Housing Officer, said, "There is always a great need for one-bed accommodation, but there is also a great turnover of these types of houses as well. It is trying to find that balance." Shedfield Parish Council had backed the project, but now oppose it. It was concerned it could lead the way to a merger with Swanmore and that street lamps will not be in keeping with the setting. All 13 homes will be priced at affordable rent and offer a total of 27 car parking spaces. Councillor Linda Gemmell objected to the decision because of concern about the amount of housing coming into the area over a very short space of time. Waltham Chase will be seeing a number of development sites in the area, including 63 homes on Sandy Lane.
Name it and we frame it. They are the new owners of the long-running Winchester business. Husband and wife Simon and Emma Hill have taken over Winchester Framing in Bridge Street. It was previously run by Jill and Dick Bendiger and had a shop had been trading for more than 40 years. Simon, 43, and Emma, 42, are hoping that their creative minds will help the business become a huge success. They previously lived and worked in London, where Emma worked as a fashion designer for retail companies, and she said they were fed up with the capital. They came across Winchester Framing by chance when looking business opportunities and decided it was the perfect fit. Simon has been training as a conversion framer and joined a fine arts guild, while Emma, who is an interior stylist and soft furnishing maker, is putting her skills to good use. The couple, who are originally from the Midlands, live in Bramdean near Alsford, also have 2 daughters. Winchester Framing is their first business together, but they have now been helped by the previous owners. Emma said it's going really well and people have been really nice and saying how nice the shop looks and saying how good it is to have something at this end of the town that's different. She added, "And what is important is that we are very much still in the framing business. All the local businesses have been really welcoming, and there is Canvas Gallery that opened up the road, and we'll be making contact with them. Simon thinks we should develop an artisan quarter at this end of the town. Winchester Framing sells both bespoke framing, homeware-like lamps, sugars, cushions, fashion vases and candles, and there's even a small gallery."
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Judy Stevenson-Baker and Valerie Lilly. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. Thanks to our readers, Maria Head.
Bye.
Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And Margaret Boyden.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye, and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label in the wallet, please ensure the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet. Thank you.